We continue this morning our studies in the Gospel according to St. Luke, the 12th chapter, reading from the 41st verse. Jesus has been speaking about the second coming, the coming of the Son of Man at the end of the age. And Peter is rather perplexed by what Jesus has said. And so we read together in Luke's Gospel, chapter 12, and at the 41st verse. And Jesus now tells the parable of the servants with their different lifestyles. Peter said, "Lord, are you telling this parable for us or for all?" And the Lord said, "Who then is the faithful and wise steward, whom his master will set over his household in the world to come, to give them their portion of food at the proper time? Happy is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions." But there's a second servant. And if that servant says to himself, "My master is delayed in coming," and begins to beat the men servants and the maidservants, and to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he does not know, and will punish him and put him with the unfaithful. And that servant who knew his master's will, but did not make ready or act according to his will, shall receive a severe beating. And there's a third servant. But he who did not know and did what deserved a beating shall receive a light beating. And here's the principle. Everyone to whom much is given, of him will much be required. And of him to whom men commit much, they will demand the more. Amen. May God add his blessing to the reading of his holy word and grant us an understanding. In our study last week, we found Jesus speaking about the second coming, the coming of the Son of Man, and of the need for us all to be ready to meet him. And so in the indicative verses, we read these words. At verse 35, Jesus says, "Because the Son of Man is coming, let your loins be girded and your lamps burning, and be like men who are waiting for their master to come." And in verse 37, "Happy are those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes." In verse 38, "If he comes in the second watch or in the third watch and finds them so watching, happy are those servants." And at verse 40, "You also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour." And now in today's passage, Jesus still has in mind the second coming. But this time, he concentrates not on the coming of the Son of Man. He speaks about the coming of the Master at the end of the age. And he concentrates on how we should live in this world in order to be ready for the world to come. And the key words are found in the second half of verse 48, where Jesus says, "Everyone to whom much is given in this world, of him will much be required in the world to come. And of him to whom men commit much in this world, they will demand the more in the world to come." And you may care to notice that Luke is very interested in that word required. He uses it, for example, in chapter 11 and at verses 50 and 51, where Jesus is speaking of the prophets who have been martyred for God's sake from the foundation of the world. And at verse 50 in chapter 11, that the blood of all the prophets shed from the foundation of the world may be required of this generation, from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who perished between the altar and the sanctuary. Yes, I tell you, all this blood shall be required of this generation. The blood of the martyrs is to be required. The word is used also in chapter 12 and at verse 20, the story of the rich fool who went to hell, not because he was rich, but because he was consumed with self-centeredness. And Jesus says in verse 20 of chapter 12 that God said to him, "Fool, this night your soul is required of you." And there the word is again. In chapter 19 and at verse 23, if you care to turn over, chapter 19 and verse 23, the parable of the master who went off on a long journey and left his money with his servants to be employed in his service. And he comes to this servant at verse 23, and the man had done absolutely nothing with the talents entrusted to him. And the master says at 23, "Why then did you not put my money into the bank? And at my coming, I should have required it with interest." And there's the same word. And the fascinating thing is this, that although we just have the one word required in the English, Luke uses a different Greek word each time for required. And it's almost as if he were trying to bring out hidden highlights, as if this was a very important concept, God requiring something from us, hidden highlights to illustrate and to show what God requires of us. And the word is used in the passage we read this morning. "Everyone to whom much is given, of him will much be required in the next world when Christ the Master comes again. And from him to whom men commit much, they will require the more in the world to come." And it is on the basis of that principle that what is entrusted to us by God in this world is required of us in the judgment that Jesus tells the parable of the different kinds of servant in the passage we read. You may have noticed that four times Jesus uses the phrase that servant. And although he speaks about that servant four times, in fact, there are only three kinds of servant in this parable. And the point that he's making is that each of these servants lives a different quality of life. And that different quality of life is rewarded by different qualities of reward when the master comes. Now, there are two great lessons in this parable, and the first is this. And I'm bound to say that this is something that is not much preached on in these days, and you very rarely hear it, even at large convention gatherings like Keswick and Strathpeffer. And the lesson is this, that there is correspondence between this world and the next. The two worlds are not absolutely different. And in a sense, when Christ comes again at the end of the age, and when eternity dawns, and when the books are opened and the judgment is set, there will be no real surprises. Because what happens in the world to come simply mirrors and reflects what has happened in this world. Let me say a word here about degrees of glory. There's a vague idea in most people's heads that heaven is a place where all the differences in this world are, as it were, ironed out in the world to come, and that all Christians are drifting home to the same kind of eternity. But that is not a notion that you find in the New Testament. In fact, the New Testament teaches that the next world is going to be as full of differences as this one is. Down here, on this side of eternity, you get all sorts of Christians. Some Christians live consecrated, costly lives. And other Christians, they are casual to the umpteenth degree. There are Christians who gladly bow the knee to the Lordship of Jesus Christ in every department of their lives, their time, their money, their possessions, their home. And there are other Christians who go for the easy options, for activities and pursuits that don't cost them much and that don't involve them in any loss of face or humiliation. There are Christians who are vital, dynamic, living, soul winners and prayers, real soldiers of the cross. And there are other Christians who are rather dead and put up the religion of the minimum performance. Do you think God would be a just God if he allowed all the differences in this world to be effaced and ironed out in the world to come? The Bible teaches that there are degrees of glory. There are rewards for faithful service. There are prizes for consecrated living. Eternity, forever, will simply mirror what has happened in time. The New Testament puts this in various ways. For example, the New Testament speaks about different kinds of crown. There is the crown of righteousness for those who have lived lives of evangelical uprightness. There is the martyr's crown for those who have died for Christ and the gospel. There's the crown of life. There's the crown of glory. There's the unfading crown. And all these represent different rewards up there for the different qualities of service rendered down here. There is compatibility and correspondence between this world and the next. That's why Paul, in his great chapter on the resurrection of the dead, speaks about degrees of glory. He says there are different kinds of flesh. There's the flesh of man, flesh of animals, flesh of birds, flesh of fish. Up in the sky, there are different kinds of body. One glory for the stars, another glory for the sun, another glory for the moon. And then he clinches it with these telling words. So it is with the resurrection of the dead. Just as there are different kinds of service in this world, just as there are different kinds of consecration and different qualities of consecration, Paul says, when the dead are raised, so it is with the resurrection of the dead. Not all flesh is alike. Earlier on in 1 Corinthians, in chapter 3, he describes the different qualities of Christian service in these terms. He says, in this world, there are some Christians who live lives that are characterized by gold, silver, precious stones. That's what their service is. Gold, silver, precious stones. And he says, there are other Christians, and their lives are characterized by wood, hay, and straw. And that's their service. Wood, hay, and straw. Now, the point about the first three is this. Gold, silver, precious stones endure and have a lasting quality. And the point about the second three is this: wood, hay, and straw are combustible. They burn. They are destroyed. He's not saying that the gold, silver, precious stones are the Christians, and the wood, hay, and the straw are not Christians. They're all Christians. But the first three put up a different quality of service. They're all built on Christ. He speaks about the sure foundation. Christ is the foundation, the rock under all the feet is Christ. The rock is immutable and fixed. But what men build on the rock that is Christ varies. And some Christians build gold, silver, precious stones in the quality of their lives. And that will be reflected in the coming glory. And other Christians, on the foundation of Christ, build wood, hay, and straw in the quality of their lives, and that too will be reflected in the judgment. They're all going to be saved. They're all going to be safe. They are all going to be secure forever. But the degrees of glory will be different. You see, heaven is not a place where the differences in this world are ironed out. What happens in heaven is simply that what happens down here is blown up into eternal dimensions. There is compatibility and correspondence and harmony and continuity between this world and the world to come. That's the point of the parable of these three servants here in verses 43 and 44. You find a servant who is, forgive me, watching, waiting, and working for the coming of the Lord. That's his attitude. The three W's. He's a faithful Christian. Friend, a faithful Christian today is a jewel above all jewels. A dependable Christian. Somebody you can rely on. A loyal saint. Here's a servant who's watching, waiting, and working for the coming of the Master. In verse 45, you find a careless Christian, a man who abuses the trust that the Master has put in him. He lives a careless life, and he gets his reward. Jesus says, God puts him amongst the unfaithful. Watch the word. Jesus doesn't say that God puts him amongst the faithless. It's one thing to be unfaithful, and it's another thing to be faithless. A faithless man has no faith at all. He isn't a Christian. Can't be a Christian if you don't have faith. But it's one thing to have faith, and another thing to be faithful. There are lots of people who have faith, but they're not faithful Christians. And this careless man is set not amongst the unbelievers, but amongst the unfaithful, the careless, easygoing, fruitless, barren Christians. Saved, says Paul in 1 Corinthians 3, saved soars by fire. Matthew says that this second man is set amongst the hypocrites, the actors, people who are playing in a drama. In verse 48, you find a third servant. This man has lived in ignorance of the coming of the Master. The words, but he who did not know. He simply had never heard about Jesus and the gospel. Nobody had ever told him. He's ignorant. And he gets his reward, says Jesus. It's a mild punishment. I think of a young man of some 18 or 19 years of age whom I spoke to this week. He lives not far from here. I wanted to commend the gospel to him. Do you go to church? I asked. No, he never went to church. Well, I pressed the question home. I said, what church should you be going to? He had no idea what church he should be going to. There was no connection with any worship in his family. So I pressed the point home. Who will bury you when you die? I said. He had no idea who would bury him when he died. So I pressed the point home. Do you know the names of any ministers in the town where you live? No, he could not name one minister in the town where he lived. The boy's ignorance is not absolute. Dean Farrar said, there's no such thing as absolute ignorance. Bishop Ryle said, even our ignorance is part of our sin. The ignorance in the boy was part of his sin. But imagine, 19 years old, and nobody had ever told him about Jesus and the second coming and the day of judgment. And in the town where he lives, there are two Church of Scotland charges, a free church, a congregational church, a brethren hall, a Baptist church, a Roman Catholic chapel, and an Episcopalian church. And the boy has been living for 19 years in ignorance of the gospel. What on earth are the Christians doing? He who did not know. Three kinds of servant. First one, watching, waiting, and working. Is that you? Second one, careless and backslidden, numbered with the unfaithful. Is that you? Third one, ignorant. Is that you? That's how they lived in this world. And all that is reflected in the world to come at the last judgment. There is correspondence between this world and the next. Eternity is not going to iron out the differences. And secondly and lastly, that brings us to this great principle in verse 48, that God will require from us only what we've been given. Let me put it personally like this. Think of the four parts of your personality. Your mind, which is the thinking bit of you. the heart, which is the feeling bit of you, the conscience, which is the fearing bit of you, and the will, which is the doing bit. If you have been blessed by God with a healthy, balanced mind, if you have a settled, ordered thought life, if your emotional life in your heart is in order and under control, if in your conscience you have a healthy fear of God, and if you have a will that is strong and resilient and competent and capable, then that is what God will require of you. That is not what God will require of those poor souls whose mental powers are in chaos and whose emotional lives are permanently in disorder and whose wills are weak and flaccid and who have no consciences to speak of. There are people in this world who are poor souls. Their life is a constant struggle against indwelling sin and weakness and failure. But there are also people in this world who are strong and healthy and able. And from them, God will require more than what is required of the others. Can I tell you in closing about Geordie Gilchrist? I met him again while I was on holiday. Geordie has been ringing the bell in Holytown Kirk for 50 years, and they've presented him with a certificate. He's a simple lad. You just need to speak to him for half a minute, and you know he's simple. He's also a good Christian. He goes around telling sinners that if they don't come to Christ and get saved, they'll go to a lost eternity. That's more than some healthy, able-bodied Christians are saying. Geordie's obsessed with Kirks. He's a very lovable fellow. He goes around the countryside in buses and trains, examining kirk after kirk and comparing each kirk with Holytown. And one day he went to Dunblane Cathedral. And who was there but the late Dr. John Gray, the minister? And Geordie spoke to him and said, "We've an electric organ with two rows of keys. Have you got an electric organ?" "Oh yes," said Dr. Gray. "Our one has three rows of keys." And Geordie was very dismayed. "We've got a bell in Holytown. Have you got a bell in Dunblane?" "Yes," said Dr. Gray. "We've got a set of bells." Geordie was very dismayed. And he looked out Dunblane Cathedral and he said, "Aye, but you hinna got a gallery." Simple man. He wanted to be one up. True to Jesus Christ and to the light committed to him. But if you have a healthy mind and a healthy heart and a healthy conscience and a healthy will, how much more will God require of you than he will require of Geordie? There are Christians who in heaven won't get near the throne of God because of people like Geordie Gilchrist. The prophet Micah once asked, "What doth the Lord require of thee?" The answer is, "Only what he has given you. A mind, a heart, a conscience, and a will to use in the service of Jesus. Three kinds of servant. Number one, watching, waiting, working. Is that you? Number two, careless and in a backslidden condition, numbered with the unfaithful. Is that you? Number three, ignorant. What doth the Lord require of thee? Only what he has given you. Are you therefore using what God has given you? Amen. May the Lord add his own blessing to the preaching of his word. To his name be honor and praise. Now we sing hymn number 508 in closing. And we sing the first and the last verses only. First and the last verses of 508, O Jesus, I have promised to serve thee to the end.